This is one of a series of podcasts produced for the Southwest section of the Cruising Association. This title covers the River Dart, from its mouth to Totnes. This podcast is not intended to replace charts or pilots, but to give additional information for those visiting the river. Enjoy the podcast and benefit from the advice from those who know the river well, but it is essential to observe good seamanship and study current charts and pilots when cruise planning.
The River Dart, I think, is one of the most beautiful rivers in England, let alone Devon.
When I was a girl growing up, you could dive off the bridge and know you got enough water, but now obviously it's silted up a bit and you can't.
It's one of the most beautiful harbours to approach, particularly if you manage to get it on a really nice day when the weather's good.
The big surprise with the day mark is that you often spot it 25 miles off and you think you're nearly home, and then you realise in the average cruising boat you've probably got another 5 hours of slog.
You know, we have grey seals, we have egrets, we have herons. You see salmon jumping sometimes. In fact, you see seals eating said salmon.
It's always a delight to see a seal that may well follow you, rather like a black Labrador.
Well, Dartmouth is a very old town. Of course, it's got the Britannia Royal Naval College.
You see the Naval College on the right, and you see the Navy performing. Some of the sprogs get tied wrong occasionally. We've rescued them a couple of times off a sandbank or two, which is quite fun, really, rescuing the Navy.
The worst traffic, as far as we are concerned, is the Totnes Rowing Club.
They're always out practising. They never obviously see you.
There is a tidal quirk to Dartmouth. The high water at Dartmouth does not coincide with slack water outside.
It's a good place to be stuck if you are stuck anywhere in the weather.
Regatta is very crowded. Dartmouth is full of stalls and activities, lots of noisy bands and a very noisy fair as well.
It's a thriving town and very, very busy in the summer. Restaurants galore, pubs galore. It's a great place. Yeah, we love it.
A kaleidoscope of impressions of the River Dart. Hello, I'm Trevor Taylor, and I'm standing on the cliffs near the Dartmouth Castle. To my right, Start Bay and the English Channel. To my left, the River Dart, one of the most popular sailing destinations in the whole of the Southwest. In this podcast, you'll be hearing from people who know the river exceptionally well. They'll guide you through the navigation, reveal secrets unknown to many, and share with you their detailed knowledge of this stunning river.
My name's Captain Mark Cooper. I'm the Harbour Master and Chief Executive of the Dart Harbour and Navigation Authority. It's one of the most beautiful harbours to approach, particularly if you manage to get it on a really nice day when the weather's good. Clearly the first thing you'll see is the day mark, which is on the Kingsway side of the harbour. That's a huge tower that the Harbour Authority looks after. And then the next thing you should be looking for is the sectored light that is on the Kingsway beacon, which takes you up onto a track of 328 towards the entrance of the harbour. And that's a sectored light with a white and red and green sector to give you an indication of which side of the channel you're on. You'll also see Castle Ledge Buoy, which is the starboard hand marker, which is down on the eastern side of the river on the approaches.
My name's Chris Cooper. I'm the HLR for the River Dart, and I've been a CA member for over 40 years now. I guess most people probably approach from the east and are probably coming across the bay. And there are some very prominent Coast Guard cottages on the western entrance to the Dart. So you can see those from probably 10 miles away.
Gil Haywood and Peter Coxon have been CA members for many years and know the river well.
It's hard to find the entrance to the river from a distance. It kind of blends in with the coastal rocks. So the first thing to look for is the day marker. That's the biggest conspicuous mark, which is a great relief when you're coming back across the channel. When you spot that, you know you're getting home.
Yeah, the big surprise with the day mark is that you often spot it 25 miles off and you think you're nearly home, and then you realise in the average cruising boat you've probably got another 5 hours of slog.
There's some great leading lights which are all on the charts, so that you can't really go wrong. And the thing to look out for in wind against tide, if you've got a fresh onshore wind and an ebb tide, it can get quite choppy for a few hundred metres at least, which is a bit off-putting. But once you get through that, you're home and dry once you get to the castle.
Yes, in Start Bay, if there's any east in the wind, there's always an uncomfortable swell. But it's a safe approach. You can approach it in any conditions.
It's a nice wide open entrance, deep and safe, but if you happen to get it on a strong southerly wind and an ebb, it's bumpy, but not unsafe like Salcombe.
HLR Chris Cooper. Southwest of the river entrance lies the Skerries Bank. Captain Mark Cooper.
The Skerries Bank's interesting because most people who come across the Skerries Bank on the way into Dartmouth are obviously coming from the Plymouth side from the west. So you'll see Start Point Lighthouse when you get round Salcombe. And then for most people at that point, they're trying to either stay in the tidal stream so they come straight across from Start Point and then make a port hand turn into Dartmouth. Or alternatively, they're trying to avoid the tidal stream that's on their head, in which case they're trying to cut inside round Start Point inside the Skerries Bank. So there's a small deep water area there that you can get in, and with the depths of water sort of 10, 15 metres. But the Skerries Bank buoy marks the eastern edge of the bank, and that's slightly deeper at that end of the bank, but is quite a useful navigation mark for people coming back from across the channel to head towards Dartmouth. I'm told it's a point that most navigators try to pick up on the way in.
If you're coming east, so you've been down to Cornwall and you're coming back, then you've got to make sure you make the tides right, you get the tides right round Start Point. And again, if it's quite fresh winds against tide, there's advice to go at least 2 miles out. And then you just make sure you set out outside the Skerries Bank. But on low springs, you'd certainly bounce over it if you got it wrong. It's where all the fishing boats are hanging about. They go to the places we don't want to go.
I was just going to say the biggest thing on the Skerries is all the fishing boats rolling for pleasure. I don't understand them at all.
Gil Hayward and Peter Coxon. Trinity House, who are responsible for the unlit buoy on the Skerries Bank, are planning to permanently remove the buoy. It's still there at the moment, but it may be gone soon. If you need to find out the conditions on the approach, then HLR Chris Cooper has a good tip.
There is a National Coastwatch Institution station at Froward Point. They will give you the weather, do a radio check. They have a dedicated channel, Channel 65, for that. You can call them up and they'll give you either the local weather and also the latest shipping forecast, gale warnings and all that sort of thing. Just one word of warning, if you try and radio to them while you're in the river, you may not get them because the surrounding hills make it difficult.
Their call sign on Channel 65 is Froward Point, NCI, and they maintain an AIS and radar watch, and they welcome visitors if you can tackle the somewhat steep path. And Chris adds a caution about the tides.
There is a tidal quirk to Dartmouth. The high water at Dartmouth does not coincide with slack water outside. The tide turns west in Start Bay 3.5 to 4 hours after high water Dartmouth, and that adds a certain amount of spice to your passage planning.
If you prefer your passage planning without spice, then pay particular attention to the tide tables and the tidal atlas. So, assuming you have negotiated the Skerries Bank and you've entered the river, what's the best way to get a mooring? Harbour Master Captain Mark Cooper.
The best thing to do when you come in, give us a ring first on the telephone, so that's 832 337, or you can get us on Channel 11. Our call sign is Dart Navigation, Dart Nav, and call us up and generally, there'll be someone on the river in most working hours. In summer, that goes on till 11 o'clock in the evening when there'll be somebody answering the VHF. And they'll give you advice on where to park, where the free berths are. Sometimes it's difficult for us to describe where those berths are, so it's worth having a good look at the charts and also having a look at the harbour guide. The harbour guide's available on our website, so you can download that to your mobile. So whether you've got reception or not, you can still see the guide when you're coming in. And then it makes it easy for us to describe the berths that are free. But generally, as I say, I don't think we've turned anyone away in the last year. We can always find a space.
Now, that's an important point to underline. There's a perception that because it's so popular, getting a visitor mooring on the Dart is difficult, if not impossible. That's simply not true. The Harbour Authority will find you a space.
What we find is, with particularly with visiting yachtsmen and people visiting with leisure craft, so motor craft as well, that they quite often people are relatively happy berthing on a pontoon, but not so happy berthing on a mooring, particularly if it's a trot mooring. We're quite fortunate because there's generally some tidal stream in most of the river, and normally that tidal stream is end to end onto either end of the trot mooring. But sometimes we just need to go out there with a rib and help them tie up and attach the lines and give them advice. and generally if people haven't been to a trot mooring before, they're generally a little bit nervous about how they're going to park, how they're going to go in there, so we can help them with that.
And there are other options too, Gil Haywood and Peter Coxon.
There's places to anchor, which a number of cruisers do, and then there's an increasing numbers of pontoon moorings available, but you have to then dinghy ashore still.
And of course they have a water taxi now to ferry you ashore.
It's normally possible for us to give you a mooring. It just means you probably have to wait for the water taxi to come and pick you up. When it's busy and at weekends, we put on two taxis, so we end up with a double taxi service. But there's always somewhere to park. And Dart Harbour Navigation Authority offers a range of moorings, from a little bit of walk ashore we'd like more, but also pontoon berths that are remote pontoons where you'll need the water taxi, or indeed buoys to park on. And if you've got a bigger vessel, we tend to put you on the mainstream moorings, which are right in the middle of the town, so the transit time backwards and forwards to your boat's not a long journey.
If you anchor, you do need to be just aware of the large ship buoys in the middle of the river and where their ground tackle is.
There are some fantastic anchorages. There are anchorages in the town just off the mainstream moorings. Put a caution there, you need to be really careful with the chart. The charts show the mooring pattern for the mainstream mooring, so you don't want to anchor on the mainstream ground chains. But there's a big anchorage there. There's also an anchorage just north of the Higher Ferry. And then all the way up the river, there are some really nice anchorages, and I think we've pointed those out in the harbour guide for this year. So some really beautiful anchorages. If you want to be the only person in one spot on the river, the river's about 12 miles long. There are something like 64 kilometres of riverbank. There's some really beautiful spots, and quite often our river patrol will pick up a yacht that's just anchored on a spot outside a creek, and they're the only person there. It's really beautiful. We're not a 24-hour service, so if you do come in the middle of the night, find a place to park, give us a call on VHF Channel 11 when the harbour office is open, and we'll send somebody out to talk to you. But talk to us, I think, is the key thing, and then we can tell you what's going on. The good news is there's always somewhere to park.
But parking comes at a cost, even if you anchor. Peter Coxon.
Yes, there's harbour dues that you have to pay as soon as you come past the castle. Even just for anchoring, you have to pay the harbour dues. But then if you pick up a mooring, then you have to pay additional fees that will double or treble it.
Harbour dues is a daily charge based on the meterage of the vessel. That's to cover all of our other charges for the navigation marks and the statutory duties of the harbour authority. If you end up on a moored on a facility as opposed to anchor, then what happens is you'll generally pay a mooring charge as well. And we'll be offering an out-of-peak discount this year. We'll be probably doing a card where we allow people to accumulate a number of nights and then get nights for free. I think our costs are pretty good for the southwest. I think we're one of the cheaper harbours, remarkably. We have a pretty good, strong mooring business. That brings in most of our income. And we've specifically made our visitor rates competitive. And this year, where we haven't raised the price of the harbour dues visitors because we thought at one point they looked a little bit expensive. And also what we did was reduce by 50% at the taxi fares. So our water taxi from this year will be down at a pound a journey per person, 50 pence for children. Normally we let dogs on for free.
The River Dart is not only popular with leisure sailors, we share the same water with a wide variety of craft, some much larger than us. HLR Chris Cooper.
The lower ferry, which is a curious arrangement with a pontoon with a tug attached to it, and it of course has priority because it's restricted in its ability to manoeuvre.
There are two crossing ferries at the bottom end of town. As you come around Bayard's Cove and you start to head up into the middle of the river proper towards the Naval College, there's a small passenger car ferry that runs across between Dartmouth and Kingswear. That ferry is pretty well hidden from the incoming traffic when the tide's high. So on spring tides, the ferry gets so far up the slipway that you can't see it from an inbound vessel. Quite often what we'll have is a vessels coming in, probably two or three in a line, small yachts, pleasure craft returning in the afternoon, and then the ferry pops out and surprises everyone. So just watch out for that one. Particularly affects people coming in because generally they don't know the ferry's there and they're on the starboard side of the channel, so it's generally coming from the Kingswear side, which is the east side, crossing over to Dartmouth. The Dartmouth side of the crossing is far easier to see. You're looking at the ferry when you come around Bayard's Cove. Similarly, though, people get caught out at the top end of the town, or the main town of Dartmouth, with the crossing ferry that's on a wire. and that runs from Dart Marina over to the Kingsway side. There, people tend to get caught out when they're coming downriver, so that, and generally it's when there's an ebb, so they'll be coming downstream on the starboard side of the channel, strong ebb, and the vessel crossing ferry pops out from behind the Dart Marina. So we've had a few close shaves there over the last few years, so keep your eye open for the crossing ferries. They are advertised in the guide, so have a look.
Harbour Master Captain Mark Cooper. It's worth mentioning the harbour guide which Captain Cooper referred to. It's been totally revised for this season and is free to download from the harbour website. It is excellent and can be viewed on a smartphone, tablet or laptop. Make sure you download a copy before setting off, as it shows all the moorings and anchorages, because the anchorage information in some pilot books is incorrect.
We've got a variety of craft that come in. We've got 30 fishing vessels that are local vessels that park on one of the big pontoons over the other side of the river on the Kingsway side. And then if you look online, you'll see also there's a visiting vessels guide for the bigger ships. So this year we'll have 10 cruise ships in up to sort of 220 metres. The bigger vessels tend to park outside and anchor in the entrance. And then, of course, there's the Royal Navy based at Dartmouth in Britannia Royal Naval College. And those guys use the river pretty much every day, and sometimes at some really odd hours when they're doing training and exercises, as they are at the moment. And then there are the trip boats that run all the way up the river.
You'll probably hear the tripper boats before you see them, as they run their PA systems at very high level, sadly destroying the peace of the upper reaches. The tripper boats ply between Totnes and Dartmouth. Roger Westlake.
Well, Dartmouth is a very old town. Of course, it's got the Britannia Royal Naval College, which is interesting. It's also got the Royal Dart Yacht Club. It's got the Dartmouth Yacht Club as well. It's got the Dartmouth Castle, opposite the Kingsway Castle. It's a thriving town and very, very busy in the summer. Restaurants galore, pubs galore. It's a great place. Yeah, we love it.
Regatta is very crowded. There are over 250 racing boats which need moorings, quite apart from anything else. Dartmouth is full of stalls and activities, lots of noisy bands, and a very noisy fair as well. If you like that sort of thing, it's lovely. It has lots of trippers. Kingsway side tends to be full of the racing people because most of the racing moorings are over that side.
Is it popular? You can't move down there, which is why it's nice to go down by boat.
The locals tend to either be involved in running the regatta or they go away.
The river does get busy. It gets really busy in the summer during the regatta, when most of our moorings are free.
The Dartmouth Regatta in August is one of the highlights of the year on the Dart, and the time for much indulgence.
Depending on what time you're coming in, you can start with al frescos for breakfast and go through to the cheap fish and chip shops or the expensive Seahorse for fine dining. There's a wide range of hostelries and restaurants.
It does get busy. It gets seriously busy when there's a music festival or a food festival or regatta week, which is, you know, the end of August.
But people who do come here tend to have a good time. The town's pretty lively, lots of restaurants and bars. If you're looking for somewhere more secluded, we've got the whole of the river. It's always good to have a tender if you're going up river, because the water taxi only runs at the bottom end.
Captain Mark Cooper.
If people have got a tight schedule and are trying to get west, they may just call into Dartmouth, but they're missing a treat.
Yes, I think most people that come into Dartmouth, if they've got enough time, they'll want to come up to Ditsam, Dittisham, as it's spelt. And there are visitors' moorings there for anything up to 18, 19 metres, I think, just above the anchor stone. Famous anchor stone in Walter Raleigh's days, etc. So Ditsam, ancient fishing village, now not a fishing village, but nevertheless a delight. And you can again dinghy ashore, the ferry boat inn awaits.
I mean, it was also famous for plums. They had a lot of plum orchards. There are still a few left, but not so many. There are no serious hazards. Any hazards like the anchor stone are well marked. And if there's windy conditions, you get a much quieter night's mooring up at Dittisham than you do down on the reach by the town.
It's one of the most beautiful, I think it's the most beautiful river in England.
Dittisham is a must. It's got a lot of visitor buoys, probably more than any other place on the river. And then Dittisham itself gives you very easy access to the Agatha Christie Greenway estate. The easiest way to get to it is probably to go over on a little passenger ferry, because the quay over on the east bank is in fact private, but it is well worth a visit.
Yes, the ferry's, I think, one of the few ferries that has to run every day of the year, bar Christmas Day, by Act of Parliament, going back several hundred years. But the pontoon is the place where all the youngsters and some of the oldsters go crabbing. And you mentioned, Gil, the seagulls more down in Dartmouth than anywhere else, probably. But they'll take your pasty if you're not careful, so be cautious there. They'll take the odd crab as well if they get the chance. But talking of crabs, if you're in Didisham, you should go to the Anchorstone Cafe, which is an al fresco restaurant, really, now, with the most divine seafood that's been featured in the Sunday Times quite recently. That's definitely a must.
It's only open between Easter and, I think, the end of October. But it is a fantastic setting and really good quality food. The one thing about Didisham is it is quite hilly. But down at the water's edge, you've got both the Anchorstone Cafe and the ferry boat inn. If you need provisions or a post office, then those are available at the Red Lion pub, which is in the centre of the village.
A shop and a post office located in a pub sounds perfect. Gil Hayward and Peter Coxon there extolling the virtues of Ditsum, or is it Dittisham? Well, it's spelt Dittisham, but the locals pronounce it Ditsum. You can choose. HLR Chris Cooper.
Next thing is Bow Creek, at the north end of this reach, and it leads to Tuckenhay and the Maltster's Arms, which was the HQ of Keith Floyd, the late chef. Good place to go for a meal, but recommend anchoring at the entrance of the creek and dinghying up.
It has in recent times had a complete makeover. Some boats do go up there and dry out overnight, but you have to be prepared to dry out in the mud. But if you don't want to do that, in the main river, up above White Rock, and sort of almost in the entrance to Bow Creek, again, there's deep water where you can anchor, and yachts will often anchor there, and they can go up by dinghy up Bow Creek.
Yes, Bow Creek's okay to stay with a bilge keeler.
Yes.
Or a drop keel.
You can go up to the Maltsters, not a large boat, I would suggest. Yes. But you can go up 2 hours either side of high water, and you can anchor there quite safely. And that's just for a peaceful night, really.
Very peaceful, quiet, no street lights.
It's absolutely lovely. Very nice. And then if you go further up on the east bank, you've got Stoke Gabriel.
The village of Stoke Gabriel lies down a small creek off the river. It is a quintessential, picturesque Devon riverside village. It has pubs, restaurants, a church, and a quayside cafe, which is ideal for that cream tea. It's home to the thriving Stoke Gabriel Boating Association, which has more than 600 members. It's a mainly dinghy sailing club, but with a small core of cruising members. Their newly constructed and impressive timber clubhouse is conspicuous at the entrance to the creek. It has a workshop and a boat store, changing rooms, showers, and a club room with balcony overlooking the river. Access to the quay is restricted because of the tide, and Commodore Julian Williams warns not to attempt navigating to the quay without first identifying the narrow channel. There are two moorings off the creek, controlled by the harbour authority, as well as an anchorage. Probably best to moor in the main river and visit by tender, but keep an eye on the tide or you'll be stranded ashore. It's well worth a visit and a very attractive spot.
I think it's the most beautiful river in England. Again, slightly biased, but if you're confident enough about the tides and your draft and you've got a decent chart, then you can head for Totnes.
I'm Marion Adams. I'm the Commodore of the Totnes Boating Association. We have sailing boats and motor boats. We have trots above the bridge. Obviously the yachts can't go underneath the bridge, so we have more moorings up there for motorboats, and we have the meal tail that we put boats in as well.
Okay, my name is Roger Westlake. I am the bosun for the Totnes Boating Association. We have moorings. We have trot moorings. I think there's about 60 in all, and it's very reasonable rates and very easily accessible. We have our own slipway here, and we have our own storage for the boats in the winter when they're not in the river, and B, for the cars of the members during the summer months.
You can't have fin keels here. You have to have bilge keels because it does dry out. In fact, there's a sandbank that's gradually moving downriver from the bridge. When I was a girl growing up, you could dive off the bridge and know you got enough water, but now obviously it's silted up a bit and you can't.
It is possible to take the river up to Totnes, but not easy to stay when you get there. There is a boatyard called Baltic Wharf, which may be able to help, but almost certainly you're going to have to go up and back on a tide.
Baltic Wharf has limited moorings, but a full range of marine services with just about every trade available. Administrator Trish Owen.
We have facilities to store up to 240 boats. We generally do it throughout the winter from September to March. And during the summer, we have systems where people can just lift out for a month. They pay for their lifts and get a month's free storage. We have a mooring on a pontoon outside the office, which will take up to a 30-foot boat, but bilge keel, obviously, because we dry.
Totnes is at the end of the navigable river. It's here the fresh water meets seawater as the rain which falls on Dartmoor finds its way into the river. After heavy rain on Dartmoor, huge quantities of fresh water pour into the river, and if that coincides with a weak flood tide, there can be some interesting, but generally not dangerous, eddies. Totnes is worth a visit, but as we've heard, mooring can be an issue. Marion Adams.
We don't have any visitor moorings at all, but anybody that comes to the club of a Sunday morning and it's high tide are willing to tie up alongside and pop in for a drink. And we'd be pleased to see people that would like to come and do that on the river.
The Totnes Boating Association's clubhouse is right on the river in the centre of the town. It's open on Friday evenings and Sunday lunchtimes, and you can tie up alongside the terrace, and within a few steps, you're in the bar. It's generally quieter up this end of the river, but that does not mean it's deserted.
The worst traffic, as far as we are concerned, is the Totnes Rowing Club, who are quite wide when they've got the oars out each side, and you have to avoid those. And, of course, they have a freeboard of about 3 inches, so any wake is liable to sink them, so you have to be very careful when passing them.
Totnes is a thriving market town. All the shops you could want are nearby in 4th Street, and there's a large Morrison supermarket just a few minutes away. The railway station has services to London Paddington, Leeds, Manchester and Glasgow, and west to Plymouth and Penzance. Now, as well as being Commodore of the Totnes Boating Association, Marion Adams is a former mayor of Totnes, so she knows the town well. It's a quirky sort of town.
Alternative, funky, yeah, very funky. I've grown up in it, but I think that came from when Dartington Hall had its students here. And it's kind of an arty, crafty kind of place. We have beautiful workshops where people do lovely paintings, and we've got a lovely museum, and the church is, the main church in the street is lovely. In the olden days, you went up the hill and we had the North Gate, East Gate and South Gate, and they all locked at night at 6 o'clock. The gates were closed and people couldn't get in the town. And outside the gates, you can still see where there was water taps, so people could still get water.
Depth is an issue when visiting Totnes, and if you can't take the mud, then you'll need to pay particular attention to the tide. Roger Westlake.
Well, from here, it is tidal, of course. The tidal range finishes at Totnes, just above the two bridges. But you get about 3 hours either side of high tide, which enables one to go out in the morning, say, on an ebb tide, and come back in the evening on a flood tide, which is what I do often, with 10, 12 hours out, and leave with the water and come back with the water.
It's no surprise that the Dart is one of the most popular sailing destinations in the southwest. It's no surprise either that many visitors pop in for a night and stay for a week.
There's some great facilities and great places to go. So people who have come in stormbound have actually found that they can spend a couple of days here quite usefully and even get a little bit of a sailing, even though the wind's a bit fluky around the land.
You see the Naval College on the right, and you see the Navy performing. Some of the sprogs get tied wrong occasionally. We've rescued them a couple of times off a sandbag or two, which is quite fun, really, rescuing the Navy.
The River Dart has everything. Vibrant maritime towns, peaceful riverside villages and quiet safe anchorages. Just about every maritime trade you could want is available, and as Captain Mark Cooper points out, it also offers great protection from bad weather.
Yeah, excellent protection, yeah. I mean, the last few weeks we've had some fairly horrendous high winds, and the river's pretty well sheltered from the southwest. Clearly, some of our berths are pontoons, so you need to have good fendering, but considering what the weather's like outside the harbour, there's always a spot somewhere on the river where you can find somewhere to park that's out of the high winds.
The River Dart, I think, is one of the most beautiful rivers in England, let alone Devon. It's heavily wooded with oak trees. In fact, the River Dart derives its name from an ancient word for oak. And there are many, many oak trees. It twists and turns, there's views around every corner that open up. It's absolutely lovely. We have grey seals, we have egrets, we have herons. You see salmon jumping sometimes. In fact, you see seals eating said salmon, which we're not allowed to catch, which I wonder if they have licenses personally, but maybe not, you know. Kingfishers, shell duck, mallards, lots of things.
Otters are coming back now. Last year I saw my first kingfisher stood here waiting for my husband to bring the boat in, and it sat on a railing here. I've never seen a kingfisher here before, and I was really pleased to see it. My grandchildren were really pleased to see it.
This podcast on the River Dart was produced by Trevor Taylor for the Cruising Association. It is one of a growing series of podcasts which cover ports, harbours and anchorages in the southwest of England. All rights to this podcast are reserved, and it may not be distributed without prior written permission of the producer.